Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in today to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. I'm full of energy this morning and really happy. It's another gorgeous day in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The weather is so nice now I can open the windows, and you would think living in a warm climate I would be able to do that, but it's so humid usually, especially in the summertime, that I can't. It just gets too humid in the house, so we have to run the air conditioning. But right now it's gorgeous, and it's just so thrilling and energizing. You know, as human beings living in the 21st century, we are inundated with a variety of media influences, such as television, movies, internet, video games, and social networks. We watch, listen, and participate in these things because it brings us some element of enjoyment. But the question is, does it bring us happiness? Most of us do not realize the powerful influence the media we expose ourselves to on a regular basis has on shaping our everyday lives. In her book, Get Real, Produce Your Own Life, my special guest today, Dr. Nancy Marammer, and she's going to get, you know, I should have asked you, Nancy, but we'll get to that. Marammer has set out to expose the illusion of media, not to bash it or blame it, but to make us conscious of the subtle control it has over our happiness and our relationships. In her book, she teaches us how to awaken to conscious living, how to, as Dr. Nancy says, produce our own lives. And now it is my privilege and honor to introduce you to my guest, Dr. Nancy. How are you?
I am well, Randy. And you know, you're the only host I didn't coach on my name, and you're the only one that got it right.
Marammer?
So, Marammer, that is right. That is right, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's so great to have you on. Why don't we start off by you telling us what exactly is real conscious living, which is really the purpose of your book.
The purpose of my book, and actually the work that I do, is called, my branding is called Real Conscious Living. And real means that it's not based on somebody else's ideas or the influence of media, that it's true to the more permanent and authentic aspects of yourself. And the conscious part of it is that you're awake and you're noticing and observing everything in your life, independent of illusions and false stories that keep you from living in the moment. And that awareness inspires your own interest and vigor and opens up unlimited opportunities for taking actions that are in harmony with the real you. And the living aspect, it's a vital way of living. It's both internal and active, and it promotes full self-acceptance and allows us to continue to grow and observe in the moment And to react to our lives with clarity and awareness of our own spirit. It's really the ability to observe your life and get real. The purpose of get real, produce your own life, is to, immediate is such a perfect way to learn to live consciously, because viewing TV, movies, and the internet are such unconscious experiences. You know, when I thought about doing the book, I was thinking about psychology and how it brings you to conscious awareness and mindful living. And then I was thinking of the media, which brings you away from mindfulness. Into fantasy, into illusion, with TV shows where an unemployed chiropractor can live with in a beach house with a wealthy playboy indefinitely and not pay any rent. You know?
So, right.
Between reality and media is quite diverse. So bringing them together and allowing people to bring their conscious living skills to media allows them to awaken from some of the trances. The hypnotic trances that we take in from media without even knowing that it's happening.
Very interesting. And one of the hypnotic trances that you talk about in your book, because I have read it and it's really wonderful and I love your sense of humor, one of the trances is the way it affects our view of love and relationships. So, when we talk about media and relationships, how does that influence the way we look for a partner or relate to a partner?
Well, you know, the love that we see on the screen is nothing like the real love in real life. And so I talk about getting real, R-E-E-L, and then getting real, getting R-E-E-L, because they're really two different things. And so the love that you see on the screen has some aspects to it that really cause confusion and cause a lot of people to expect their partners to behave in certain ways that they're just not going to behave. So, for example, there's something I call script reading. And, you know, when people say to their partner, well, you're not doing this and you're not telling me how much you love me every day and you're not doing that, it's called relationship script reading. And while most people could use more love in their lives, you'll have it once you stop expecting your partner to read the script. And the script is the expectation that your partner will be as romantic as Hugh Jackman in the movie Kate and Leopold. But remember, he was a prince from a different time period. There's an illusion here. And people take that illusion into life, and then you say, well, why don't you love me as much as this guy on TV? Why don't you need me as much as this woman on TV? And why don't you express it in these certain ways that we've picked up from media? And, you know, you want this kind of commitment without compromise, and you want the partner that always knows what to do and always knows what's right for you. And usually the script is unconscious, but it gets embedded in your mind after absorbing images from books and TV and movies and people who present the illusion that they have this perfect relationship.
Yes, we really do not know what goes on behind closed doors. I find that it's many times it's the relationships that we envy are the ones that end up in divorce. It's very strange. So we really don't know. So it's very important that we get a grip on reality in our relationships and not have these expectations. And I guess this all really starts when we're young, you know, in the fairy tale books we read, and then it continues on. I guess the media has used that to its advantage to continue,
you know,
that kind of fairy tale.
It really has. There's something in American movies and TV that is unique to our culture. And you brought up something there, Randy. It's called the happy ending. Okay. And right now, the Lifetime Network, between now and the end of 2014, is running holiday movies all day, 24 hours a day. And if you watch them, they all end well. Love, they're all about love, and love always ends well. And that's an illusion that's really, as you said, starts in childhood. I quote a wonderful book in Get Real called Cinderella Ate My Daughter, because it's really about the fact that, you know, and Walt Disney said, you know, no, we understand that we have this princess mentality that we impose on children, and that there's the prince who's going to awaken you and make your life, make you happier. And if you expect your partner to make you happy, that illusion is just very, very destructive. And yet it's pervasive. And, you know, the idea not only of the woman being dependent and the man being the rescuer, but also just the illusion that love is perfect and all ends well. And that illusion causes a great deal of disillusionment for people who are in REAL relationships. I had an experience when I was traveling in Europe. I had done a video on how children learn stress management by watching television, and a German production company was interested in turning it into a television series. But after they saw it, they said, you know, it's just too American. And I said, well, what does it mean that it's too American? And they said, it's too sweet. It wraps up too nicely. And, you know, if you look at foreign films and you watch foreign movies, they don't wrap up nicely, and sometimes they don't even wrap up at all. They just sort of hang. And our movies and our TV shows are always wrapping up. You know, everything always comes out for the best.
Right, and we wouldn't enjoy them because that's what we're used to, right?
Right, that's right. And you know, there was one movie made in America with George Clooney called Up in the Air a couple of years ago, and people were criticizing it because it didn't wrap up neatly. And that was the genius of the movie. It left you to decide what was going to happen next, but it causes a sense of incompletion. And people want to wrap it up, and they want it to be happy. But that spills over because those ideas unconsciously and subconsciously enter your mind and become a part of what you want for yourself. And we pick up illusions from billboards and TV and movies and the internet, but we also pick up these illusions from our peers and from our parents. So media is not the only problem. We pick up our illusions about what should happen in our lives in many different ways.
That's true. So is there really a psychology behind advertising and these shows and movies and everything? Is it more than just writers? Is there really truly a psychology that goes into this?
There is, and it's the, we could call it the psychology of longing if we want to put a name on it. But in media, there's always the idea. There are several things that occur in every single show, whether it's a sci-fi show, whether it's a science fiction, whether it's a religious show, whether it's a show about spirituality, whether it's a show about love or romantic comedy. And there's always the illusion that love or the goal or the, you know, defeating the other superhero comes after great adversity. And if we look at the kind of adversity that, you know, in love that it has to have a story, and it has to be a long one, and it has to be drawn out over many years with many obstacles. And we take that on. We take on the idea that love has to be difficult. And the goal of a good love story is to draw you into the passion and make you care about the outcome. And in order to do this, you become hooked in. Once there's a mystery to be solved, you become hooked in, and you're taking in this information and these illusions subconsciously. But in order to do this, great love has to have great adversity and conflict before you can be together. And boy, if we're taking that on, we're really in trouble. Because in love, the quest begins with meeting your partner and experiencing the obstacles and challenges to connecting with them. And there would be no story if there were no obstacles.
That's true. That's true. It just doesn't have to be that dramatic and that hard. And I know, I mean, I had that problem for many years, is I thought love was, you know, was supposed to be this you know, Mount Everest that you had to climb to get there. Once I realized that that wasn't really true, my relationships got a whole lot better. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You gave up, in the book I talk about hypnotic trance, you gave up the hypnotic trance that love has to be difficult. And it's a trance that we get in all of our books and in all of our movies and TV shows.
Yes, yes, it's true. How do we break that trance?
Okay. Well, if you sit back and laugh about it a little bit, that helps. In the book Get Real, I talk about conscious viewing, and there are so many ways to view consciously. And one of the things I do is sort of expose the trance, expose how advertising works and how love stories work and how science fiction works, how politics work and the news and the media, and really expose exactly how the production is done in such a way that you are taking in the hypnotic trance. And, you know, I don't know where we would be without our media. We love our entertainment, and it's so wonderful that we can get the news. But if we can watch more consciously, you're going to get the best benefit from your media without the damage. And, you know, I talk about the suspense that's created. Remember that any love story is creating suspense. And if you get too hooked into that suspense and you don't sit back and use your conscious viewing skills, you're going to take on a lot more than what you want to. You know, I use the example of Downton Abbey because that's such a popular show. And in the final episode of the 2014 season of Downton Abbey, they left the character of Lady Mary caught between two suitors, with neither knowing who had the inside track on Lady Mary. And viewers were comparing it to the tension of the 1979-1980 Dallas series that ended with the question, who shot J.R.?
Right.
And Dallas was so popular that pop culture invaded politics, and President Jimmy Carter remarked that he could get elected if he knew who shot J.R., and a session of the Turkish Parliament was suspended to allow legislators to go home in time to get a chance to view the first Dallas episode of the next season.
Unbelievable.
And unbelievable. It was the most watched show in the history of TV because we're hooked into the illusion that there is a J.R. There's no J.R. He's just,
right,
you know, Larry pretending to be J.R. But we don't talk about TV that way. We don't say, you know, there's a great show on HBO right now called Outlander, and a woman goes back 200 years in time. And we don't say, I wonder if Claire, we talk about Claire, the woman who's sent back in time. We say, I wonder if Claire's going to make it back into the present. We don't say, I wonder if Claire's character is going to come back into the present. We take these people into our living room, and we make them our family. And so we care about them, and they become very real for us, and they become role models for us in a lot of different ways that I talk about in Get Real, because the suspense is what hooks you in. With Downton Abbey, you know, the question is, are viewers desperate to know who Lady Mary is going to end up with? Now, fortunately, most of the characters on Downton Abbey realistically have post-traumatic stress disorder following charges of murder, assault, and blackmail. You know, and so the media, especially PBS, is catching up a little bit with how we really can pull back the veil on these illusions and look at what they are. And, you know, one of the illusions, particularly in love, is that love has to be difficult and there has to be a happy ending. And so you had asked me about the solutions, Randy. We want to break trances, first of all. We want to recognize the trances that we've taken on, even subconsciously. We want to bring them to consciousness. And then we want to break them. And I have hypnotic trance breakers in each chapter of the book because there's so many different ways to break trances. And then I offer what's called the RXTV, the prescription. for conscious viewing in each domain, whether it's comedy or family or reality TV, which, by the way, isn't real. It's staged, and you know, when you're watching the Cupcake Wars, you know, if the guy came in and just made his cupcake and won, it wouldn't be interesting. You know, the cake has to fall when it's in the oven, and somebody has to come in and start painting the kitchen during the show. There has to be a story, and so there has to be an illusion about what's happening, and a whole, you know, many obstacles to overcome before we get to the happy ending. But I offer prescriptions, and one of the prescriptions that I offer has four key points, and it's called the RxTV prescription for love and sex as seen on TV. And the first key point is to view consciously by identifying the messages in the love story. You know, when you sit back and you watch that love story, what are the messages in this story? Are they that love is hard, that love is difficult? Are they that men have trouble with commitment? Are they that women have trouble with commitment? What are the messages in the story that you're taking in without even realizing it? So that's point number one. Point number two is to decide how you feel about the message of the story. Decide how you feel about the love-seeking strategy and the sequence that occurs in the movie or in the TV show. And then if you, I have a technique called spy TV in the book. So you look at, you're spying, you're looking for the message in the show, and then you're going to decide if you accept it or not. Decide, okay, is that a real strategy in love? Is that a good strategy in love? And if not, decide what you would do instead that is true to your authentic character, what you want from a relationship, and how consciously you can relate to a partner. And then I talk about the top 10 C's for conscious viewing. And there's one for each chapter. And one of them is to consider, as you're viewing, consider the messages. Stop and think about what is the message of this show. And sometimes, you know, really the messages get blurred because there'll be a character in a show, and this happens a lot with superheroes in sci-fi. There'll be a character in a show who does, or in crime shows. I have a whole chapter on crime because crime shows are the most popular. But in crime shows, sometimes good people do bad things for the right reasons, and it justifies, sort of the end justifies the means. And that is a strategy to be very careful with, especially when you're viewing with children.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
How do we instill in our children, how do we teach them to be conscious viewers?
Okay, wonderful question. That was something I actually did a lot of research on, and that really brought me much, much further into bringing psychology into the media. And that is how the research on how children are affected by TV. And what we know is that if an adult watches television with the child and helps them process the information and the messages in the program, that children benefit a great deal from viewing. So sitting down and, you know, if your child wants to watch a certain show and you're not sure, watch it with them a few times and help them to decide if the messages in the show are good or if they're constructive or not constructive for them personally. And also help them simply recognize that this is a show, this is just entertainment, have fun, enjoy yourself, but if there are messages in there that really aren't good for you, that you can avoid them, you can notice them so that you don't unconsciously take them in. And that helps kids really enjoy their media without being damaged by it, is that parental involvement. And another thing that's important for watching with children is to, if there is a good message, for example, if your child is watching Sesame Street, if you have a young child, the important thing is to practice what they learned later. If it's a life skill, if it's a social skill, if it's a counting skill, that parental involvement with following up, with practicing the activities learned in the show is what really helps kids to get the most from media.
Right. That's definitely right on. I understand that. That would work because reinforcement with children is really the most important thing that you can do.
Right.
What do we do about breaking the spell of violence?
Okay. The chapter on crime and violence, you know, when you turn on your TV and the lead-in actor is a corpse, you know that you're in trouble. it's not going to be light. Okay. And so a lot of why people, you know, why crime and drama are just, there's so many crime and drama shows. Some of them are truly excellent and very well done, although they're violent. And the idea is that there's suspense, much like in the love story, there's suspense. And the minute you see the dead body, you are hooked. That's why the lead actor is always a corpse. But once you see the dead body, you want to know, who is it? And who killed him? And why did they kill him? And so you're hooked. You know, the bait is set and you're hooked. And as you watch, it's very important to sort of step back, observe and view consciously, and know when something's happening on the screen that you don't want to see and it's not good for you, because those images that you take in are in the brain. Once you see them, they're part of your memory bank. And taking in too many violent images is very damaging, much more so for some people than others. Some people are far more sensitive to the violence in science fiction and drama and crime shows than others, of course. But once you take those images in, they become a part of your memory bank. And one of the things that we know is that if you watch too much crime and violence, you tend to have an exaggerated sense about the amount of crime that occurs, and you tend to feel less safe in the world. Mm-hmm. You tend to view the world as a much less safe place to be because every day you're seeing these images of the world not being safe. And so it affects your basic sense of survival.
Can we watch too much news? I mean, talking about violence and our perception of the world, is too much news not good for us?
You know what I love about you, Randy? You read the book. You're asking all the best questions. In the chapter about politics and the news, that is one of the most revealing chapters, because in that chapter, I really peel back the veil and really show you what is going on when you're watching the news. You think they're simply reporting facts, they're simply reporting events, and they are not. And that's one of the shows that you might not even think to watch consciously, and it's one of the ones you can learn the most from watching consciously, because the news is reported in such a way that which stories are presented and which details are presented have already formed what's called a bias or a point of view, so that what you're getting on your end is something that's already been filtered. I judge the media and the mental health awards, and as I watch them, you know, we really look at, are they simply reporting the facts, or are they interviewing people about what happened in the news who have a bias? And it's very subtle, but you really have to watch carefully. And if you read the chapter on politics and the news, you may really awaken and open up to how to view even political ads consciously, because the skills in that chapter really help you to become a much more conscious viewer.
It seems to me that years ago, before the 24-hour CNN and those kind of things, that journalists and reporters, the of their occupation was to be unbiased and just be a reporter. Did that used to be the case, and now because we have this 24-hour viewing, they're no longer unbiased, or was it always like that?
Well, there was less bias earlier.
Okay.
If you talk to Walter Cronkite, I mean, if you look at some of Walter Cronkite's quotes, he'll tell you that, you know, that there was bias, but there was less bias before. Now there is more bias because there are more shows, more networks, and networks, if you know, a lot of people will say that specific networks have a specific bias. And if you watch the news, I give a good example in the book. I was watching someone reporting about a bill that went forward and was passed by Congress. And the reporter, who was supposed to be unbiased, made a remark that political party A is pleased that this bill passed, but political party B is making trouble because it got passed and causing headaches for the president. Now, that there was bias in there. The reporting was party A is pleased that the bill was passed. Party B is causing headaches because they don't like it. So party B are the bad guys right away. They're not saying party B, you know, filed a motion against the approval of the bill. They're saying party B is causing headaches for the president. In other words, party B are the troublemakers.
They're the troublemakers.
The troublemakers. So even in that report, and I show in the politics chapter how to notice these things so that your political point of view is authentic. And it's not something that you unconsciously picked up about the troublemaker party.
Right. And like Fox and CNN are, well, Fox is more conservative and CNN is more liberal. And that's very obvious. They make no bones about that. So I guess people that have that kind of that mindset will gravitate towards one or the other and really feel that affinity towards their views.
Well, and so, for example, if your views fit with what Fox or CNN's views are, you're going to watch that network. You're going to embed those views more and more and more deeply into your unconscious. And it's going to become not a political point of view, it's going to become your truth. And when it becomes truth, that's really scary because then you don't even realize that you have a bias. You think you're right because it becomes so embedded, and there's a risk in not being able to see any other point of view because there are always two sides to every story. You know, there's,
right.
There are always ways to look at everything, and you become unable to do that.
And as we're talking, you know, I'm realizing that because these are the two major news networks, and we wonder why the country is so evenly divided between Republican and Democrat, that this could really be the responsibility of these two networks that is dividing this country.
Well, and you know, I think that it's, as we say about media, and I talk about this in the book, we drive the media, and the media drives us. So we are a divided nation, and we are a divided nation among Democrats and Republicans, and the pull is extremely strong right now, very much like it was in the 60s, with conservative and liberal, you know, movement. And so we actually are telling the networks consciously or subconsciously that we want to hear about our point of view. The networks, on the other hand, are presenting what we want and, in a way, telling us that we want more of it. So it's a relationship that we have with media in which we are telling them what we want and they're telling us what we want. And it's very important to tell networks what you want. It's very important if you think something's too violent to let them know. It's very important if you think that a show should not be going off the air, that it should be kept, to let them know. Because we do drive the media. You know, they're not going to put something on the air that we're not going to watch. And, you know, we started out with Survivor, and now we have a plethora of reality shows because we're telling people that's what we want. And so we have a lot of power to influence what we see on TV. and in the movie.
Well, that's really good to know. That's really good to know that we should be involved in what we watch. You know, at this point in the show, I want to make sure that I give you time to tell my listeners about yourself and your books and how you can be contacted and those kind of things. Just tell us about yourself in ways that I may not have covered.
Okay. You know, we're talking about the fact that, you know, I work as a media expert, and I provide interviews for radio and television and articles and such, but I also talk to groups about real conscious living and about getting real and how TV affects our ability as leaders, as partners in relationship, as managers in business, how the media affects us in so many ways, and how we can actually use the media to help us be better in these ways, if you know how to view consciously. And so my work in public speaking is very important to me, because really the individual, getting a group of people together who are committed to getting real is just such a joy. And if you want to learn more about getting a copy of the book, Get Real, Produce Your Own Life, or finding out about having a Get Real presentation for your group or organization, you can reach me at, my email address is drnancy@realconsciousliving.com. And my website is full of audios and videos and articles on all different topics in psychology and relationships. And my website is www.realconsciousliving.com. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to get your feedback on the book, or to find out if you have a group or organization that would be interested in learning how to get real.
Right. That's great. You've also been an expert for articles in magazines like Dr. Oz, Reader's Digest, Women's World, Your Tango, Whole Living, Prevention, this is a slew of them, Successful Women, Science and Theology News, and one of your books, Spiritual Fitness, was an award winner, right?
It was, Randy. It won the same same award that the Dalai Lama's book won that year. I was so touched. It was such a blessing, but yes, it did win an award for in the area of connecting spirituality and science together.
That's so fascinating. Is there really a connection? I mean, it. I think that's going to eventually blur, isn't it? The line between spirituality and science. Isn't that where we're moving towards?
Well, we're moving, yes, we're bringing them back together. They were separated at one point in time. If you go to the ancient religions, there's not a lot of separation, but they're coming back. Science is realizing the power of our thoughts and our energy to influence our physical health and wellness. So yes, they are coming back together. And in the book Spiritual Fitness, I talk about how I use scientific medical treatment and a whole lot of spiritual techniques and health techniques to heal from a diagnosis of leukemia. And so I'm speaking from firsthand experience when I wrote Spiritual Fitness.
Okay. So did you have a diagnosis of leukemia?
I did, and it was end-stage leukemia with a poor prognosis for survival. And by using spiritual techniques and also using medical techniques, I healed very, very quickly, and I was able to terminate treatment in 1/4 of the expected time period.
Well, gosh, Nancy, that's another show. we'll have to get back on that one, because I love that. I think that's so important for people to know that they can heal themselves, and that these so-called death sentences are not necessarily, we have control over our own bodies. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your expertise on this topic. It is a fascinating topic, one that everyone can certainly relate to. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and being such a wonderful guest.
It was Randy, it was my pleasure. I love talking to you and would be happy to talk to you again.
Yeah, that would be great. We will have to connect and talk about your spiritual fitness book. I think that would be another really fascinating show. So I will be in touch with you about that. So thank you, and go on and have a beautiful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, we are out of time. But if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, you can always email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. And Randy is RANDIGFINE.com. Stop by my website of the same name, randygfine.com, and sign the guest book. I welcome feedback about my shows, so you can leave comments for me there as well. And also, I have great articles, very inspirational articles on that, on my website. So I have a lot of devoted followers, and I would hope that you would become one as well. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. And you can do that by, at the top of each page, each show page, it gives you an opportunity to be a follower of the show, which will... you will be notified of all my new shows coming up, and I have some really great shows for you, so I don't want you to miss out on that. And more followers will get the show the recognition that it deserves, so become a show follower. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. And you can also contact me on clarity.fm/randy-g-fine, where I'm doing counseling privately and confidentially on the telephone about any issues that concern you. For more information, go to clarity.fm/randy-g-fine. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is talk radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. Be the change. Be a better way.